Mary Boyne and her husband, Edward, in quest of a country place in one of the southern or southwestern counties, had, on their arrival in England, carried their problem straight to their good friend, Alida Stair.
Well, there's Ling, of course, in Dorsetshire.
As we Americans would call it.
It belongs to Hugo's cousins. You can buy it for a song.
Why for a song?
With miles from the railway. There's certainly no electric light or hot water pipes or any such vulgarities.
Sounds just what we're looking for. Mary?
Ned would never believe he was living in an old house unless he was thoroughly uncomfortable in it.
I can assure you Ling is almost too uncomfortable to be true.
And the ghost? You've been concealing from us the fact that there is no ghost.
Oh, my dear. Dorsetshire is full of ghosts.
Oh, but that won't do at all. I don't want to have to drive 10 miles to see somebody else's. I must have one of my own, and on the premises, too. Come on, Alida, own up. Is there a ghost at Ling?
Oh, there is one. Not that you'll ever know it.
But what in the world constitutes a ghost except for the fact of its being known to one?
I can't say, but that's the story.
That there's a ghost, but nobody knows it's a ghost.
Well, not till afterward, at any rate.
Till afterward?
Not till long, long afterward.
Afterward, by Edith Wharton. Dramatized for radio by Christopher Hawes. With Buffy Davis as Edith Wharton. Mary Boyne, abruptly exiled from New York by her husband's business, had endured for nearly 14 years the soul-deadening ugliness of a Middle Western American town. Ned Boyne had ground on doggedly at his engineering, till, with a suddenness that still made Mary blink, the prodigious windfall of the Blue Star Mine.
Mary! Mary! The Blue Star Mine! We've hit pay dirt! At last! At last! We're rich, honey! Rich!
Had put them, at a stroke, in possession of life. They decided to find a place where they could simply retreat from the world, Ned to write his book.
On the economic basis of culture.
Mary to indulge her passion.
For gardening.
And to lay the butter on thick with every delicious morsel.
They certainly knew how to lay it on here.
Sure did.
Ling House. Dorsetshire.
A fine old house, hidden under a shoulder of the downs, with almost all the finer marks of commerce with a protracted past. It was neither large nor exceptional. This made it, to the Boynes, abound the more completely in its especial charm, the charm of having been for centuries a deep, dim reservoir of life. The life had probably not been of the most vivid order. No doubt it had fallen as noiselessly into the past as the quiet drizzle of autumn fell, hour after hour, into the fish pond between the yews. But that is what at first seemed to suit Ned and Mary to the ground. At first, I said. For these backwaters of ancient existence sometimes breed in their sluggish depths strange acuities of emotion. And Mary Boyne felt, from the very first of their days at Ling, the mysterious stirrings of intenser memories, of stronger feelings. And as the months sped by, from autumn into winter, an estranging shadow seemed to cast itself over Mary and Ned.
Ned?
As once, one late October afternoon, waiting in the library for the lamps to come, she rose from her chair to stand with him among the shadows on the hearth.
Yes, what is it?
Is something the matter?
I don't believe so. I'm going for a walk, before the light goes.
It's so damp and gloomy.
I don't mind that.
May I come with you?
I'd rather be alone.
Just for some air.
You seem so preoccupied.
Mary, I am not in the least preoccupied.
As if you had some secret you were keeping from me.
I have none, you know that.
Well, then perhaps without even knowing it, I'm hiding one from you.
What nonsense.
Perhaps the house really is haunted. And we've been taking the poor old ghost for granted all these weeks.
Alas, poor ghost. Poor, ineffectual demon.
And that's why it beats its beautiful wings in vain, in the void. It's the house itself, of course, that sees the ghost. Perhaps one has to get into communication with the house itself. You've done that already. That's the great weight you carry round with you, so silently.
No, one is not allowed to discuss a ghost one has seen. It's bad form. A breach of taste, my dear. Like a man naming a lady in his club.
Of course, even if you had seen a ghost, you wouldn't know it, would you? Not till afterwards. Who is that?
Who's what?
There, look, through the window.
I don't see anyone.
A man coming this way, down the Lime Avenue. Not one of the locals in those clothes.
Hello? Who are you?
He doesn't seem to hear you.
Hey, you!
No.
I better go and see what he wants.
Who was it? Did you find him?
No. I think it must have been Peters.
In those clothes?
I do need to have a word with him about the stable drains, but he'd disappeared before I had a chance to get to him.
But he seemed to be walking so slowly.
I guess he must have got up some steam in the interval.
Yes, I suppose he must.
Mary dismissed these thoughts from her mind. Indeed, thought nothing of them, while that mean, damp winter blossomed into spring. And so it was that one calm, late afternoon, as she sat alone in serene communion with the deep shadows of the library, she was surprised again to see, as she peered into the outer world and the bright light the windows held, a figure shaping itself far down the perspective of lime trees with their fresh green leaves.
Who is that?
A mere blot of deeper brown against the greenness. But then she saw...
Oh, thank goodness. Ned! Ned!
She waved and waved to him.
Hi, Mary! Coming! Coming!
Talking it over later with Ned, Mary was almost gay.
It's really too absurd, but I never can remember.
Remember what?
That when one sees the ghost, one never knows it.
Did you think you'd seen it?
I actually took you for it in my mad determination to spot it.
You really better give up if that's the best you can do.
I'll give it up if you will. Have you?
Have I what?
Given up. Trying to see the ghost.
I never even started trying.
Well, of course, the exasperating thing is there's no use trying, since one can't be sure till...
Afterwards, yes. Any idea how long?
No, none. Have you?
Lord, no. I only meant, is there any legend? Any tradition as to that?
Not that I know of. What makes you ask?
I'm dying for my tea, you know. And here's a letter for you.
For me? A clipping from a newspaper. From the Waukesha Sentinel. Your name's here, Ned.
Oh?
Someone named Elwell has brought some lawsuit against you. Maintains there was something wrong about the Blue Star Mine. Ned, what is this? I can't understand more than half.
Oh, that, is that all? I thought you'd got bad news.
You knew about this?
Sure I knew, and it's all perfectly okay.
What does this man accuse you of?
Pretty nearly every crime in the calendar. It's just a silly squabble over interests in the Blue Star. Elwell's a fellow I put into it. I gave him a hand up when he needed it.
But if you helped him, why does he repay you like this?
I guess some shyster lawyer got hold of him and talked him over. The whole business is all very technical and complicated. I thought that kind of thing bored you.
But a lawsuit? Doesn't it worry you?
It's all ancient history now.
You mean he lost his case?
The suit's been withdrawn, that's all.
Because he saw he had no chance?
Oh, he had no chance, all right.
And it's all right for us.
I give you my word. It was never righter.
One of the strangest things Mary was afterward to recall, out of all the next day's strangeness, was the sudden and complete recovery of her sense of security. It was in the air when she awoke in her low-ceilinged, dusky room. It went with her downstairs to the breakfast table. It flashed out at her from the windows, and it reduplicated itself from the flanks of the urn and the sturdy flutings of the Georgian teapot.
What are you going to do with your day?
I'm getting behind on the book. I'll be in the library. And you?
I have an appointment in the greenhouse.
Really?
Something wrong with the piping there, apparently.
Ah.
Some sort of an expert is traveling out from Dorchester to make a diagnosis of the boiler.
There's heating in the greenhouse, you notice, not in the house. I guess Hugo's cousin cared more for his plants than for his people. Okay, my dear, I'll see you later.
Peters, has the man from Dorchester arrived?
Not yet, ma'am. I'll bring him to you when he does.
Mary paced along the springy turf of the bowling green to the gardens behind the house. At their farther end rose a grass terrace, looking across the fish pond and the yew hedges to the long house front with its twisted chimney stacks and blue roof angles clear cut in the pale gold freshness of the air. She'd never before had such a sense of intimacy with the place, such a conviction that its secrets were all beneficent, kept, as they say to children, for one's own good. Such a trust in its power to gather up her life and Ned's into the harmonious pattern of the long, long story it sat there weaving in the bright, clear sun.
Mrs. Boyne?
You're not the gentleman from Dorchester.
No, I'm not.
A youngish, slightly built man, the brim of his soft felt hat casting a shade on his face so that she could not see his eyes.
Then can I help you in some way?
I came to see Mr. Boyne.
Have you an appointment with my husband?
I think he expects me.
He never sees anyone in the morning. He works. Have you come a long way to see him?
Yes, I have.
Then why don't you go to the house? Send a message by one of the servants. If you've come so far, my husband may agree to see you.
Gentlemen's come, ma'am. Oh, gentlemen from Dorchester.
Thank you, Peters. If you'll excuse me, that way to the house. You'll find my husband in the library.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mary was beguiled into spending the rest of the morning with the Dorchester engineer in absorbed confabulation amongst the flower pots. This colloquy ended. She was surprised to find that it was nearly time for luncheon, and she half expected, as she hurried back to the house, to see her husband coming out to greet her. But she found no one in the court, but an under-gardener raking the gravel. And the hall, when she entered it, was so silent that she guessed Ned was still at work in the library.
Shall I tell cook to serve luncheon, ma'am?
Yes, Trimmel, do go about that. No, wait a moment. Ned? Ned, may I come in? Oh. Trimmel, Mr. Boyne must be upstairs. Kindly go and tell him that luncheon is ready.
If you please, ma'am, Mr. Boyne's not upstairs.
Not in his room? Are you sure?
I'm sure, ma'am.
Where on earth is he, then?
He's gone out, ma'am.
Gone out?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, where did he go? And when?
Out the front door and up the drive, ma'am.
Did Mr. Boyne leave no message?
No, ma'am. He just went out with the gentleman.
When did a gentleman call? Do explain yourself, Trimmel.
I couldn't exactly say the exact hour, ma'am.
But it's after 2 o'clock.
The gentleman called about 11 o'clock, ma'am. Mr. Boyne went out with him. Didn't leave a message, ma'am. Not even his name. Didn't give a card. Just wrote his name down on a slip of paper, folded it, and handed it over. said I was to deliver it at once to Mr. Boyne.
Perhaps he's just gone with a gentleman to the railway station. Yes, I'm sure that's what it is. Trimmel, I'm going for a walk into the village. Tell Mr. Boyne when he returns that I won't be long.
Yes, ma'am.
Mary Boyne's experience as the wife of a man, once a busy engineer, and subject to sudden calls and irregular hours, had trained her to the philosophic acceptance of such surprises. She walked, after taking a solitary luncheon, with as little concern about her husband's whereabouts as she could manage, to the village post office a mile or so away, and when she had concluded her business there, turned for home. It was late afternoon.
Are you there? Ned?
As Mary stood in the long, silent room, her dread seemed to take shape and sound, to be breathing and lurking there amongst the shadows. Her eyes strained through them, half discerning an actual presence, something aloof, but watched and knew.
Trimmel! Trimmel!
Yes, ma'am?
You may bring tea if Mr. Boyne is in.
Very well, ma'am. But I'm afraid he is not.
You mean he's come in and gone out again?
No, ma'am. He's never been back.
Not since he went out with the gentleman?
No, ma'am.
Who was this person?
That I couldn't say, ma'am.
But you must know something.
I told you, ma'am. He wrote his name on a folded paper.
You must have a name, Trimmel. Where is this paper?
I wouldn't know, ma'am.
Let's see. Perhaps it's here. Oh, a letter. Half finished. As if left there. Half finished.
I have just received your letter announcing Elwell's death. And while I suppose there is now no further risk of trouble, it might be safer.
I never read what it said on the paper, ma'am. Weren't none of my business.
And when you carried the paper to Mr. Boyne, what did he say?
I don't think he said anything. I gave him the paper, ma'am, and as he was opening it, that other gentleman came in and I slipped out.
You must be able to tell me what he looked like.
His hat, ma'am, was different-like, as you might say.
With a wide brim?
Yes, ma'am.
What sort of face? Pale? Youngish?
Yes, ma'am. Couldn't see the eyes.
In the fortnight since Ned Boyne's disappearance, there had been no word of him, no trace of his movements. No one but Trimmel had seen Boyne leave the house, and no one else had seen the gentleman who accompanied him. The bright, fine English noon seemed to have swallowed them both completely.
I have just received your letter announcing Elwell's death. And while I suppose there is now no further risk of trouble, it might be safer.
What trouble? What might be safer?
Mrs. Boyne?
Inspector, have you any news?
I am very sorry.
You have other cases to attend to now.
Yes.
Other disappearances, no doubt.
Among other things, Mrs. Boyne, we are exploring every possible...
Days and days and days and days. And now it's weeks and weeks and months, and I've grown too tired of waiting, my darling. I sit here in the library. I watch the days pass. I feel as if I've swallowed a poison. Something that leaves the brain clear as ice, but holds the body still. Quite still.
Mary?
Alida?
Darling Mary.
Yes? What is it?
You must come away, my dear.
Why must I?
You think if you sit here, he'll come back to you.
No, you're wrong. You don't see. I don't think that at all. I know he'll never come back now. He has gone from my sight forever, as surely as if death itself had waited for him that day.
Then why sit here waiting for him?
What else can I possibly do?
The floor she trod had felt his tread. The books on the shelves had seen his face. There were moments, certainly, when it seemed as if the walls might break out in some audible revelation of their secret. But such moments grew fewer and fewer. The revelation never came. And then she knew for certain that it never would.
No, I'll never know now what became of him. No one will ever, ever know. The house knows, though. The house and...
The library, in which she spent her long, long evenings, knew. For it was here that the last scene had been enacted. Here that the stranger had spoken the word which had caused Boyne to rise and follow him. Ling was not one of those garrulous old houses that betray the secrets entrusted to them. And Mary Boyne, sitting face to face with its silence, felt the futility of trying to break it by any human means.
A gentleman, ma'am.
Mrs. Boyne?
Yes. Who are you?
My name is Parvis, Mrs. Boyne. I'm an associate of your late husband.
My late husband?
I'm sorry.
You assume that he is dead.
Oh, I don't wish to...
Please don't apologize. I think I believe it, too.
I happen to have run over to England on business. As an old colleague of your husband's, I couldn't leave without paying my respects to you, Mrs. Boyne.
That's very kind of you.
Or without asking you to tell me, what are your intentions with regard to Bob Elwell's family?
I know nothing about them. Nothing at all. Nothing whatsoever.
You know about the Blue Star Mine, I presume?
Only what my husband told me. Very little.
Your husband made a great deal of money out of that deal, Mrs. Boyne. Others weren't quite so fortunate. It's the kind of thing that happens every day in business. Bob Elwell wasn't smart enough, that's all. I guess it's what the scientists call survival of the fittest, right?
You accuse my husband of doing something dishonorable.
No, no. I don't even say it wasn't straight. I don't say it wasn't, and I don't say it was. It was business.
But Mr. Elwell's lawyers apparently did not take your view, since I suppose the lawsuit was withdrawn by their advice.
Oh, yes. They knew he didn't have a leg to stand on, technically speaking. It was when they advised him to withdraw that he grew desperate. You see, he'd borrowed most of the money he lost in the Blue Star, and he was up a tree, you might say.
What happened to him?
He tried to shoot himself.
He tried?
Yes, ma'am.
He didn't succeed in his attempt?
No.
Did he try again?
He didn't have to. He dragged on for months. Then he died.
Why are you telling me this?
I assumed that you knew about this business. If not, it's high time you did. You see, it's only come out lately what a bad state Elwell's affairs were in. His wife's a proud woman and hung on for as long as she could, going out to work, taking in sewing at home when she got too sick. Something to do with the heart, I believe. But she had the children to look after, and Elwell's mother, and she broke under it and finally had to ask for help. That called attention to the case, and the papers took it up, and a subscription was started. Everybody out there liked Bob Elwell. Here's an account of it in the Sentinel. A little sensational, of course, but I guess you better look it over.
Widow of Boyne's victim forced to appeal for aid. Two pictures. One is Ned's, and the other.
I thought if you felt disposed to put your name down.
The other picture. A youngish man, slightly built, with features somewhat blurred by the shadow of a projecting hat brim.
Oh.
Mrs. Boyne, you're not very well. Shall I call someone? Shall I get a glass of wine?
No, no, no. I know this man. I spoke to him in the garden.
That's not possible, Mrs. Boyne. That is a photo of Robert Elwell.
Then it was Robert Elwell who came for him.
Came for your husband?
The day he went away from here.
Robert Elwell was dead, Mrs. Boyne.
Will you answer me one question, please? When did Robert Elwell try to kill himself?
We'll see it here. Look, here it is. Last October.
The 20th, wasn't it?
You knew it was?
I know now. Sunday, October the 20th. The day he came here first.
Came here first?
Yes.
You saw him twice?
Yes, twice. He came first on the 20th of October. We saw him from here, from the library. He came down the Lime Avenue toward the house. My husband went to see who it was, but there was no one there. I couldn't think what had happened. I see now. He tried to come then, but he wasn't dead enough.
Not dead enough?
No. He couldn't reach us then, you see. He had to wait 2 months to die, and then he came back again. And that time Ned went with him. And then... Oh, my God!
Well, Mrs. Bourne, what on earth is it?
Oh, my God! I sent him to Ned. I told him where to go. I sent him to this room, the library. I sent him here!
She felt the walls of books rush toward her, like inward falling ruins.
Mrs. Boyne? Mrs. Boyne? You?
But she couldn't hear Parvis or feel his touch as he tried to stop her falling. And through the tumult, she heard but one clear note. Alida Stair speaking to her, ages ago, on the lawn at Pangbourne.
That's the story.
That there's a ghost, but nobody knows it's a ghost?
Well, not till afterward, at any rate.
Till afterward?
Not till long, long afterward.
In Afterward by Edith Wharton, dramatized for radio by Christopher Hawes, Edith Wharton was played by Buffy Davis. Ned Boyne was John Garasio, Mary Boyne, Barbara Barnes, and Alida, Carolyn Jones. Parvis was Sean Baker, Trimmel, Rachel Atkins, and Robert Elwell, Alex Lowe. Peters and the Inspector were played by Christopher Scott. The director was Marion Nancarrow.